Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
World is trying to get it together, trying to help the fellow man, hoping we can make it better. Do you really think we can?
Well, hello everybody. I am John Fisher, and this is Catch Blog Talk Radio with John Fisher, your host, where we discuss making real in the marketplace what we always have believed. We're so excited to have you, and I am really pumped that this is the first, our first night, our first experience with Blog Talk Radio. We've got a whole bunch of stuff planned for you tonight. We got a great guest in McNair Wilson, who you're going to meet in a few minutes. I'm going to introduce you to Gunnar Simonsen, who is our producer. And he is just a wonderful, witty guy, and we're going to talk about stuff. We're going to summarize and recap what Craig shared with us. We're going to just have a great time, and then we're going to talk about our next guest. We've got guests lined up until January. And in case you don't know who I am, I'm a musician, songwriter, singer, writer, author. And I've been doing the catch of the day, daily devotional we've been sending out for about 5 years at least now. And this is our first opportunity to do something live and online with an audio, and we can talk to people and have them chat. We're just learning how to work all this thing, so it's going to be very, very, very exciting. So I want you to meet some of our people here. First off, actually, Marty Fisher, the inimitable Marty Fisher, looking fantastic today.
Thank you, sir.
Is right here. She'll be on the chat line. Marty, say hello.
Hello, everyone. Welcome.
And I want you to meet Gunnar. Gunnar, are you there?
Hey, John. What's happening, man?
Hey.
Well, that was quick.
Pumped about this.
This is exciting.
Yeah.
This is going to be a lot of fun.
I'll
tell you what, this is exciting. It's a whole new venture, you know, and being able to spend some time with you on Blog Talk Radio, and for many people, probably being able, so that's what John's voice sounds like, you know, and reading your wonderful work over time. And we've got several people that are joining the chat window right now, and it's really easy if you can sign up to register to chat on Blog Talk Radio with us through Facebook. And if you just scroll on that screen all the way down, you'll see this chat window happening. And at the bottom of that, you'll see register and log in. Just click register, and a little Facebook button will show up. Just click that and a couple pop-up windows, and you're in. And so, John, we're going to be able to chat with people and interview people. This is going to be a whole lot of fun. Are you excited?
Fantastic. yeah.
John's very nervous.
Well, we're trying to get John, the chat thing working.
Yeah, we're getting the chat thing going on. John, tell me about the song that we played in the intro, the Matthew's Blues. I mean, when did you write that song?
Well, I wrote that song before I went to South Africa a number of years ago to speak in Rosetown University and Rhodes University in Grahamstown. And, I wrote that song thinking about the fact that I was going to be in an intellectual university setting, obviously a non-Christian world. I was going to be bringing the gospel with an evangelistic team from a group called African Enterprise, and I was going to have my guitar with me. And what would I say to those people? They, you know, put me on a coffee house somewhere, and what would I sing? And it would be this song, "The World's Trying to Get It Together, Trying to Help Their Fellow Man, Hoping We Can Make It Better. Do You Really Think We Can?" And it's a song that kind of goes into basically a Romans 1 type of reality, that there is a God out there. He cares about us. We need to give him thanks and find out more about him. It just opens the door. It's a song that opens the door.
You know, John, that song there, if you think about it, you know, I think that's a question, don't you think, a lot of people are asking in this day and age is, do you think we can?
Absolutely.
I mean, we're being bombarded by so much in culture. It's a relevant song.
It stays relevant. Well, truth is always relevant. That's the beautiful thing about it. It's going to always hit us at a deeper level. That's what I love. And, you know, we're talking about, we want to be talking about current events, too, things that are happening. You know, I've been thinking, well, what's going to be my current event this week? And unfortunately, I'm going to have to admit, for some people who won't like this, it's got to be the World Series.
Oh. Now, what's your take here on the World Series, John? I mean, you're a Southern California guy. Aren't your teams knocked out by now?
I can see you're really excited about it, Gunnar, too. I mean, Marty's about as excited as you are. She thinks baseball is like watching paint dry.
Think I'm alone.
But I come from an era that everything stops for the World Series. And I know it's changed now. We've got so many things going on that the World Series is one little tiny aspect of a huge world and about every aspect of entertainment you can imagine. But it's still a big deal for me. And even though I don't have any one of my teams in here, except I was a Boston Red Sox fan, and I used to have a beard, so I have to say, you know, obviously, you know, that's my team this time around. But I got to tell you, But I got to tell you, I've been reading the sports section. I read a lot. I love the sports section.
Yeah.
I don't know what's the matter with my mouth today. And
you've never seen me perform ever in front of an audience.
John, are you trying that ventriloquism thing again?
No, we're going to have that in a minute, though. That's going to be our surprise guest.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, tell us about this article you read about baseball.
Yeah, it's a really a cool thing that the LA Times has done. They have one of the Dodger players. He's a catcher, A.J. Ellis. I'm not a Dodger fan, but I've become a fan of this guy because he's writing every day. And I think it's really cool that they have a player doing this. And he writes every day something about the game that he, from his perspective and being a catcher, and the catchers know more about the game than anybody out there, including pitchers. And they just run the whole thing. So he's a great person to talk about. He's a pretty good writer. And then he does these little side things. And about 2 days ago, he was talking about what happens to ball players at the end of the season when they go home. I thought this was really insightful. He writes this, the day after the season ended, my 5-year-old daughter asked whether I had to go to the baseball field. My answer of, "No, honey, the season's over," was met with a smile and a simple, enthusiastic yes from her. In the next week, baseball will crown a new champion and the winning team will celebrate long into the night, but morning will come and for many of the combatants, the off-season will begin with saying good morning to kids who are unimpressed and aloof to their father's professional accomplishments, but genuinely only excited to have a full day with dad. Baseball is important and provides for our families and loved ones, but being a parent is the most important job we will ever have.
Wow. Wow. What does that say to you, John? What are you reading into that?
Well, I read my own experience into that, you know.
Yeah.
And having a life on the road myself and, you know, performing and doing that, coming home and having kids and being dad and, you know, being with people who are impressed and then being people who are not impressed.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's good for you. And and really, it's got to work at home or it doesn't work at all.
That's right.
I don't know, John. Why don't you tell them a little bit about what my children did when they were on the road with you?
Tell us.
Well, I would make a mistake and take them with me sometimes. And what would happen is that they would get into all kinds of trouble. I mean, they would love to get back into the kitchen. While I was out there singing at a church, maybe, they'd be in the kitchen raiding the refrigerator. you know, making hot dogs and stuff, and or they'd be under the pews tying people's shoelaces together, or the worst was in the offices on the Xerox machine, Xeroxing their bun on the buns on the, on the machine. You know, as long as, and I had to make sure I got all that stuff out of there, you know, when I left, or I obviously was never coming back to that church.
I can't believe you just said that, Johnny. That is scandalous.
Well,
oh, I love
this
it.
This is the Catch Radio, man. We're going to say anything we want here. And
that's exactly right.
We're going to have a ball.
I love it. Well, hey, John, you know what? We've got a great guest that's online, on the queue, ready to go for the inaugural show today. And this is going to be an exciting interview. Just sitting back and listening to you guys talk yesterday. You guys known each other for so long, but you know, I was reading part of the bio, and maybe you can share a little bit more of his bio. But he was, you know, a Disney Imagineer, helped create theme parks. Are you kidding me? What this guy done? I mean, this is amazing.
Yeah. Well, Craig is about the most. I call him the most creative person I know, and he's really done it all. He really has. We're going to talk about his new book, and I'm very excited about this. I'm excited about what Dr. Leonard Sweet says about it. He's one of my other favorites. He is the E. Stanley Jones Professor of Evangelism at Drew University and a very prolific author and speaker himself. He writes, "I couldn't stop reading Hatch. This may be the best book on creativity ever written. C. McNair Wilson will help you discover or uncover the maker's mark of creativity that is imprinted on each one of us. It's a book that will become required reading in my seminary courses and doctoral intensives."
Whoa.
So we're about to spend a few minutes with this guy. I mean, he's an actor, director, teacher, playwright, author, cartoonist, coach to public speakers, and as you mentioned, Disney Imagineer. And, I almost forgot. He's also somewhere in there. He was a ventriloquist, and he has promised to do some ventriloquism on the radio.
Now,
that's right.
How does that happen, John? I mean, it's like I could be, you know, he's going to throw his voice in on the radio. I don't think this has ever been done in the history of the world.
No, and we're going to witness it. In fact, he even said, "I promise to do the entire interview without moving my lips."
Yeah. he may even just throw his
voice. Throw my voice.
He's going to throw his voice.
It is coming out of your toaster. Okay, so.
He's going to throw his voice into another Blog Talk radio show.
Welcome, Mr. McNair. McNair, are you there?
How are you?
Welcome to our show, McNair.
You know, I just while everybody's thinking about it, there is a great tradition of ventriloquism on the radio with Charlie McCarthy and Edgar Bergen, who many of your listeners will have no idea of. And as a result, Edgar Bergen got so used to doing on the radio that he stopped trying to not move his lips. He was quite an accomplished ventriloquist. So that later when TV came along and he did Ed Sullivan and everything, they would complain that his lips were always moving because he just didn't need to do that on radio. So anyway.
Oh, wow. Well, Craig McNair, I'm so happy that you're here on our first show. I can't think of anybody I'd rather have. You know, I was thinking about how far we go back. You know, you and I are pre-Marty in my life.
Oh, yes.
And
that's
way back. And then I remember, you know, we're both very much into evangelical Christianity, avid fundamental homes. And, you know, you went to church 4 blocks from my house. You remember that?
St. Gilbert Union, you bet.
Yeah.
And my dad was the principal of a school there for a number of years, and that's part of my pedigree.
My father was the choir director at our church, and here's the deal. Where we connected, I think, was that you and I connected with a passion for the truth. We both love the Lord, but we really didn't like legalistic Christianity. We didn't like a lot of the stuff we grew up with and the rules and all of that. And I think, you know, I think we both had our own way of going about this. I wrote rock and roll, and you went and wrote a play, The Fifth Gospel, that was sacrilegious. I mean, you upset a lot of people, and still it's one of the greatest things I've ever experienced is The Fifth Gospel. Tell us a little bit about that, how you got into it, why you did it, and I want to know if you're still doing it, too.
Yeah. Well, growing up in what I call beigeanity, you know, beige is not too bright, not too dull, not too loud, not too soft, and that's the church is always trying to be, you know, I actually have a manuscript for a book that I don't know what to do with, but it's called Beige, like church. And so because I was in the theater, but mostly, you know, did it at school, but mostly did it professionally to do good theater. I had to go outside the church. There was no theater in church other than the all-church Christmas skit, you know, Jesus and the Indians Go to Bethlehem. And so I was going through a period of doubt in my late teens and early 20s where I didn't doubt my faith. I didn't doubt the power of the cross or my salvation, but there was a lot of other stuff. You know, the metaphor would be all the briars and the brambles growing up around Sleeping Beauty's castle, and I couldn't figure out how to get to the truth, the essence. And I made up some stories about Jesus just as a human being, as a person, as a guy, as a boy. And I sat down one day with the youth minister at the church I was attending, and it happened to be Ben Patterson, our old pal, and he just, you know, laughed his head off in other parts and invited me to share these stories on a Sunday night to the high school and college kids at our church in the San Diego area. And I got up one night, and literally on the way to the performance, I thought, I can't call this, what am I, got to give it a name because I'm going to be performing. And so the name just came to me, The Fifth Gospel. I tell people there was a flash of light and a voice spoke out of the hood of a Volkswagen Beetle. But there was no design to ever do it more than once. I improvised it. It went almost 3 hours long, and a lot of familiar stories, but then, as you allude to, a lot of stories of just Jesus as a boy. And one of the most famous ones was where the disciples say, it's really hot, couldn't we stop and cool off? And this mud fight and this water fight ensues. And that story grows out of a real event where I was on a canoe trip down the Colorado with a group of guys that Ben Patterson happened to be the team leader on. And we're sitting on this muddy beach, drying off after a big water fight. And I said, somewhat sarcastically, Ben, if Jesus was here, what would he do? Would he be involved in this frivolity? And Ben's answer was to throw another handful of dirt at me, and the whole thing started again. And in the 1,500 or more times that I've performed The Fifth Gospel live and still do it all these decades later, I always go back at that point in the story to that point on the river with Ben and these guys. And so, you know, performing at a colleges, both Christian, you know, small Christian colleges with hundreds of small Christians walking around, as well as large pagan universities, it always gets a great reaction, especially from the non-believers. And yeah. I mean, I did a Cal Berkeley one time. A guy stood up and says, "Yeah." You mentioned in one of your pieces that you wrote about on Catch today that I don't call him Jesus because I need people to distance themselves from the Jesus they know. So I simply call him Howard, and that just came by accident in the first performance. And so it's Howard, Howie, you know, so just a name. Could have been Bob, could have been anything. It just Howard was what came out. And a guy at Berkeley stands up and says, "Well, you know, if the Jesus everybody talks about, if he was more like this Howard guy you talked about, I think I could believe in Jesus." And there were 800 people in this auditorium. The auditorium seats 600. And I said, "Christians, are you listening?" And this was sponsored by several campus Christian organizations. So, wow. You know, it shakes up people of faith, as well as it also challenges people who say they don't believe. Because my question is, what is it you think you don't believe? And so it's a chance for me as an artist to use my art and my faith and have them come to an intersection. And since then, I've got a second show called From Up Here, where the only prop is a 6-foot ladder, and it's all the great stories of the Bible where somebody's up somewhere and God gives them a new perspective. So Adam and Eve picking fruit, Noah on the deck of the ark, David on his balcony seeing the neighbor lady enjoying a little moonlight bath and so on, and then Jesus on the cross and so on. And it's been fun to use theater, and it gets me opportunities to be in the theater sharing my faith, besides all the sharing of my faith I've done behind the scenes when I've been, you know, doing Shakespeare and Sondheim and other plays.
Yeah, that's so good. I actually, one of our readers wants to know if you got Howard from Our Father Who Art in Heaven, Howard Be Thy Name. Is that?
No, that's an old joke that came along after I'd been doing the Fifth Gospel. I started doing the Fifth Gospel in 1972, and I didn't even hear that joke until
I had to do that. I had to do that just in case that particular catch listener is listening.
Can I just, I'm looking here. Can I just interrupt? Can you tell everyone just a few seconds about your time with the Isaiah House and your performance there?
Oh, yeah. Well, John and Marty are involved with a house that's for women who've had various, bad turns in their life, and it's a place where they can come and have a clean and safe place to stay and sleep overnight and have a meal and so on in there in Orange County in Southern California. And they invited me one night to come and do Fifth Gospel, and there's this wonderful kind of open-air canvas-walled pavilion in the backyard. So we had this amazing potluck dinner that's just food from that we all enjoyed. And then I did the Fifth Gospel, and they were a very receptive, very demonstrative audience. I mean, trust me, they were better than, if I've done the Fifth Gospel 1,500 times, I can think of at least 300 churches I've been in that didn't enjoy it as much as these ladies did. And great conversation afterwards. And, that's the thing that's been fun about being able to play that I can just show up in my street clothes. I mean, I don't usually need costumes or anything. I need a chair and a straw broom. And that night, I don't think I even used a chair. I think I just used one of the benches that was there in the pavilion with people gathered all around. And so I can do it anywhere and have done it, in, as I say, unimaginable places.
Yeah.
So.
Well, if you're listening to this and you ever see a chance to see the Fifth Gospel, drop everything and go. I don't care how far it is, do it. It'll be worth it.
And bring all your
And bring all your people who don't know Christ, who don't like Christianity, because they'll be blown away too.
But we're talking, I just got a confirmation. I'm going to be in L.A. doing it the first week of December at a new church out in the El Segundo area called Water's Edge. I think it's watersedge.org, and it's like 9:30 in the morning. I think it's that date is, the 8th or 9th of December. So, find that. It'll be on my Facebook site and stuff. People should be able to find it. So
fantastic. And by the way, Craig's, if you're listening, Craig's site, his website is tewithmcnair, T-E-A with W-I-T-H, McNair, MCNAR.com. We'll give that
N-A-I-R.
A few more times. NAIR.com. Yeah. We'll give that a few more times before we're done. But, Craig, one of the things that one of the big emphases we have here with The Catch is we want to help Christians be in the marketplace. We want to help them be out in the world. And I think both you and I struggled with the whole Christian music and Christian arts thing that developed, and then a lot of people just left the world and kind of did it in a safe place, and we have left the arts and theater and places like that. We have left them without light, and I think you saw that really early on and began to seek opportunities outside into the culture. Tell us a little bit about that. Of course, that would include your time with Disney, but what's it like being as a Christian in the terrible theater world, that all of that stuff? Give us a little perspective on it.
Well, I was fortunate enough to have two parents that, besides being, their pedigree is Christian and church-going and their families and stuff, I always tell people I'm a prenatal Christian. I never had a chance to sin, but there was a couple of weeks in seventh grade where I took a left turn. But so I started doing theater when I was a tiny kid, church plays and stuff. But when I was, I think, 12 or 11, I saw a little ad in our town paper. We lived in Pasadena, Southern California, for open public auditions for a big stage production of A Christmas Carol at the Pasadena Playhouse, big professional theater company in those days. And I went and auditioned, and among other things, they were quite taken with the fact that I'd come on my own, on my bicycle. My parents weren't there. I'd come of my own volition and so on. I did the worst interview of my life. I read other people's lines. I came in too soon. But they liked my energy, and they especially liked my initiative to be there on my own. few months later, when it came around to them putting together the following season of plays with a company of actors, a few of their seven or eight plays had children's roles, and so they called, and two of the top people came and met with my father and mother and I, and I was invited to be a part of the professional company when I was 13, still in junior high school.
Wow.
And it was based on primarily, they knew when I read I could act and I could do that. I just, you know, messed up the logistics. But the main thing was that they were pretty sure I had the discipline. And there's plenty of kids out there who would love to put on a silly hat and get on stage. And so my professional theater career began at age 13 in a production of Shakespeare's Richard III. Now, I think there was a typing error on the cast list, and I didn't play King Richard. But nonetheless, I was in it in that play and a part of that season. And I think maybe the best thing that ever happened to me in life is that I began my life with two parents that would get me and that would be open to me. And they didn't just sit back and say, well, whatever you want to do, you know, passiveness doesn't help. If you've got a kid who's got enthusiasm and passion about something, and all humans do, we just don't pay attention to what that passion is often because we think it might be something that's incorrect or, gee, you can't earn a living at that. But my parents really encouraged that. Now, they also made me do my homework and so on, but I was in, you know, plays all through life. And when I went off to college, picked a college, Minneapolis College of Art, picked a college because there was also a professional theater company there on the same campus with the School of Art. And so just have always been in that, and just from an early age was aware that for me to do the level of art and theater and other things that would challenge me, that it probably wasn't going to be enough to do the kind of the little bit of art that was being done in the church, you know, the occasional church bulletin cover for Youth Sunday and car wash for the college group raising funds to take kids to Disneyland. I did all those things as well, but my folks were never discouraging and never negative about me being outside of the church to, you know, to find what was best for me in terms of growing who I was. And I think that's the level that you and I connected on originally, that we were interested in being Christians and doing art, and if they didn't occur in the same buildings, that was fine. And so it's I just have always enjoyed that. So when the opportunity, I was in a Christian street theater company for a while, Lamb's Players, and from doing that, we did some of the Renaissance festivals, and those were not Christian events, but we did Renaissance-style plays with Christian stories, Christian messages, Everyman or Noah's Ark and so on. And then that led to the Disney people seeing us, inviting us to be at the opening of Epcot Center. We had a three-month contract to do 10 shows a day in Italy. After being there just 10 days, they said, can you bring another troupe in? And we'd been doing 30 Renaissance shows, festivals a year, so we had a troupe of 50, 60 people around the country that were doing simultaneous festivals. So we bumped up to Italy and the United Kingdom, and then that was 82, and by 85 we were doing 45 shows a day at Epcot Center all over the different stories and so on. And the Imagineering guys saw us, and because what we were doing was so immediate, so high touch, so audience participatory, and so fun, that they'd just never seen anything like that, contacted us, invited us to come out, my partner and I, to come out to L.A. to the Imagineering headquarters in Glendale, and to consult with them on some projects they were thinking about doing. And the timing was perfect because Michael Eisner had just become CEO in 84. He was very focused on the creativity of the company and knew that a good deal of that creativity had always come out of Walt Disney Imagineering, the division that Walt started in 1952 to design Disneyland and then to continue to design all the parks and resorts. So I consulted there for a year, and in the middle of that process was offered a full-time position. I had seen a Walt Disney TV show when I was about 11, 12 years old, where Walt had one of, he called him an Imagineer, a man named Claude, showing a model of a new ride they were building that was to be the Pirates of the Caribbean. I just found and posted that video on my blog, T with McNair, so people can watch it. And I heard that word, Imagineer, my head exploded. About 2 years later, when Walt Disney was the Grand Marshal of the Rose Parade, at the end of the parade, my mother always catered a reception for the Grand Marshal and so on. So I, along with a handful of other kids, got to meet Walt Disney, and as luck would have it, I was the last one in the room and got to spend about about 10, 15 minutes with him. And I knew it was a long time because they came looking for him, wondering where he was. And we'd been talking about model trains and building towns. And I had my sketchbook. He said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to be one of those Imagineers like that guy Claude on your TV show. And he poked me with his finger in my shoulder. And he said, you want to be an Imagineer? He said, then you shall be. And when my boss, Marty Sklar, invited me to be an Imagineer, I told him that story. And he said, that sounds like Walt. If Walt said that, then I have to hire you. My first day at Imagineering, I met that man, Claude Coates, in the video, and we became friends. And so it's just a series of miracles. We were talking the other day, you and I, about that phrase, all things work together for good to those that love and serve God. And sometimes the things that work together are not the bad things. I think God can take bad things that happen to us, because I don't think God makes bad things happen to us. You know, John and Marty need another challenge. We'll give them another teenager to take care of. No, I think, you guys choose to put the extra teenager in your life, and then God says, okay, we'll figure a way to make something good of this or make a lot of good of that. And so then to go to Imagineering and to be a part of a team of people that's working at the very highest level of creativity, thinking up, and I was on the team of 5 brand new theme parks, from a blank piece of paper to opening day, to Disney MGM Studios, now the Hollywood Studios, and what is California Adventure, and Paris Disneyland, and even being asked to put together a team of people to work with Mel Brooks to come up with something. And the long story short is, out of that came the Mel Brooks Hollywood Horror Hotel, which eventually became the now famous Tower of Terror. And there are 4 of those little rides around the planet right now. So, you know, to get to do that, people say, what's the ministry? The ministry is that you create a place where families who spend a minute and a half together every day get to come and spend 4 or 5 days together, because you've created a place called Disneyland or California Adventure. And if that's not a ministry, I don't know what is.
You know, Craig, I want to introduce you to our dear friend Peter Hershen, who happens to be our chairman. But he is co-founder and vice chairman of Silver Dollar City and Dollywood. Silver Dollar City in Branson, Missouri, and Dollywood in Tennessee. You two need to meet each other. One creative mind to another. You guys will explode.
I'd love to. I worked on a project in Branson one time, a show there, and I missed a couple of opportunities to meet the Hershens, but I'm a big fan of their work.
Wow. Well, Craig,
John, let me just say.
Craig, go ahead.
I switched in the 1990s. I found a book of Irish names, and I found out that my middle name, McNair, that I got from my grandfather, Clarence McNair Wilson, that McNair means son of the servant. And I'd always used McNair to sign my cartoons, but I thought, you know, I need something, and calling myself McNair and explaining that why I use that name in my workshops, whether it's to lawyers or to ministers or wherever I speak, helps me keep my place. You know, you come off stage and you've gotten a standing ovation from a couple of thousand professionals at some big convention. You know, I don't always have a friend there off stage to look at me and say, you've done better, but I do have that name. And so, what I tell people who call me Craig, it's the way I carbon date my friends, whether they
there
call
you
me
go.
Craig or my parents. So it doesn't bother me at all. It's just I know some of the listeners are saying, how many people is he talking to?
Well, you know, I'm thinking about your new book, Hatch, Brainstorming Secrets of a Theme Park Designer. Wow. I'm thinking that probably a lot of what you have gleaned through all of this you've been telling us about is most likely in that book. And but of course, it's just for corporate executives, right?
Yeah. Hatch is a book for creative problem solving, and it only works for companies, churches, families, or any 2 people who want to get together and solve a problem, or someone sitting by themselves, a writer who needs a better name for the new book they're writing. What I noticed all my life, because my family used to brainstorm where we're going to go on vacation, and everybody's idea counted. Because my brother was the youngest didn't mean he was the dumbest or had the worst idea. And the best brainstorming allows everybody in the room to put their ideas in. I boil it down to three words, think, say, write. Whatever you think, say it out loud. Whatever anybody says out loud, write it down, get it on the wall so people can see it. And as it says on the back of Hatch, and it's Hatch like catch, only with an H, hatch an egg, hatch a plan, most corporate brainstorming, or most brainstorming of any sort, isn't brainstorming, not even close. Usually what's going on is we're doing playful arguing with snacks on the table. Someone has an idea, and the person across from you tells you why it's too expensive, impossible to do, they'll never let us do that, and so on. Well, that's not brainstorming, that's arguing. And what I have is the seven agreements of brainstorming, seven basic agreements that any team, if you agree to play well with each other's using these, for example, no blocking. Somebody has an idea. If anybody says, well, what does that mean? What's that going to cost? That's blocking. But if somebody has an idea and say, well, that sounds interesting, tell us more. Well, what do you mean by that? Sometimes it's an attitude that is blocking. And so you keep going and you keep going. If you've got 5 minutes at breakfast during summer camp to decide what songs you're going to sing for the evening meeting because the message is X, that can be brainstorming. So you start by separating creative thinking from critical thinking. So I put it all in a book. It's the first of a three-book series. It might be a four-book series on creativity. The next book will be on personal creativity. But the great surprise of Hatch from reading all the reviews on Amazon and from different blogs that people have sent me their reviews of is that my penchant for helping people recapture their own original creative spirit leaked through. So it's in Hatch as well.
Fantastic.
So the book will work for anybody. And that's the book that, thank you for reading the quote from Leonard Sweet that came up. He and I had met at a conference a while back, and I just thought, well, I'll just send him a book for fun and see what happens.
Greg, we're getting close to end here, but I've got to have you tell us at least a little bit about your 40th birthday. And that story is just incredible. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
And it's an example of taking what you're talking about, McNair, and putting it into practical use.
Right. One of the agreements of brainstorming is wild ideas. And wild ideas are expensive ideas, impossible ideas, ideas that when somebody comes up with you don't know how to do them. And that chapter 6 in Hatch, it's called Donuts on the Moon, and that story is fun too. When I turned 30, a group of guys said, hey, we're taking you to lunch at your favorite Hollywood restaurant, Musso and Frank's. Let's go. So we load up the car and said, we've got to stop by the Hollywood Bowl because one of our other buddies is there rehearsing with the UCLA alumni band. Well, I knew he'd been in the UCLA band, so it didn't occur to me until we walked into the Hollywood Bowl, which is, if people have never been there, 16,000-seat amphitheater on the side of a hill in Hollywood, California, and we walk in. And there's about 30 or 40 of my friends from all across time and my brother and his wife, my mom and dad, with a cake with my face on it, giving me a surprise party, which ended up lasting a day and going to different places and so on. So 10 years later for my 40th, I thought, there's got to be a coda. There's got to be a follow-up. So I began to think, just brainstorm with myself, what's 40? And called my cousin who's an airline pilot. I said, can I charter a plane and you take us up to 40,000 feet? He said, sure, but when you get there, you're still in a plane. I thought, oh, bad idea. So I was living in Pasadena, and I called the Rose Bowl, and I said, I need a 40-yard line. What would it cost me to rent the Rose Bowl for a couple hours? And she said, $6,000 a day or $4,000 for half a day. I said, that must be the new math they teach in the Pasadena school. And I told her about the Hollywood Bowl, and she just was not at all moved. And I said, look, we're just going to come in, stand on the 40-yard line, tell a few stories, eat some cake, and then we're going to Old Pasadena for dinner. So we won't mess up any. She says, it's $4,000 a day. Six. If I'd been talking to a machine, I wouldn't have gotten a better response. So I said, well, thank you for your time. And as I'm hanging up, I think, I'll just go across the street, literally across the street where I was living, and one house down, to my friend and neighbor, Rick Cole, comma, mayor of Pasadena at the time. And, you know, since he was a UC Berkeley graduate and a practicing Buddhist, I thought, look, I'll take him a bowl of basmati rice and a Yanni CD, and he'll let me have the Rose Bowl. But I didn't want to do it. I want to do it on my own. And so I called, and I said, there are other 40-yard lines, but we have the L.A. Coliseum. Pretty good place, 92,000 seats. Called the guy, and I didn't ask him how much it was. I just said, is the Coliseum available on Saturday, January the 4th, my birthday? So sure, what do you need? I said, I need a 40-yard line. He said, which one? I said, is one of them already booked? You know, one end of the Coliseum is just a generic stadium. The other end has the arches, the Olympic rings, and so on. So if you want a generic, he thought, you know, if you're making a movie. So I told him about the Hollywood Bowl 10 years previous. He said, this is great. We've got to do this. He said, well, I got to pay a janitor to unlock the place. He's $35 an hour. I said, what's the minimum? He said, 4 hours. So I did the math in my head. I said, okay, $140. This is a pretty good start from the Rose Bowl. And then he said, we need to add a user's fee on there, and I'm crossing my fingers and praying under my breath that he'll say only $1,000. He said, how about $100? Long story short, for $240, I got the L.A. Memorial Coliseum, the only stadium in the world that's had the Olympic Games twice, the 1930s and 1984, and 50 friends. And the pictures of both events, the Hollywood Bowl and the Coliseum, are in hatch. And you can see the 40-yard line there in front of us. And we threw the frisbee around, played touch football, told stories. One of my best friends, Max Miller, videotaped the whole thing, asking people to tell their story of how they met me. And then we all went off to Pasadena for dinner. But I tell all that not to say, hey, look how smart I am, because it was a shot in the dark. It was a wild idea. It was an impossible idea. I found out later, after I'd written the check and booked the thing, that to rent the Coliseum unfurnished with no electricity is $20,000. And I got it for $240. And I tell the story just to say to people, what's your idea? How big can you dream? How wild can you be? And then how can you figure out to make that be a reality.
Oh, McNair, that is so good. So good, and so good for all of us. I can't thank you enough for being with us. And the only thing I want to say is, will you do this again sometime?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've known each other 40-some years, so we'll do it again in 40 years. No,
I'm hoping we keep on doing this. So, Craig, I'm going to call you Craig because that's what's in my heart. Thanks so much for this. Thank you.
But as a brand name, McNair Wilson at TEA with McNair, MCNAIR.com.
He's
a brilliant man, I know.
Yeah, just Google McNair Wilson. It'll pop T with McNair is the second thing that comes up usually. So thanks, you guys. This is a lot of fun.
Thank you. Thank you. God bless. Thanks for everything.
You too.
Whew. Gunner, are
yes.
you there?
I am here. Wow.
Huh?
I'll tell you what.
Isn't that great?
I tell you what, you know, you just wonder how many wild ideas and dreams we've all left on the table, right? And and it's all within each of us, right? And the impact we can all make. I just want to go rent a stadium right now or do something and read that book. I mean, what's your takeaway from that time there, John?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my takeaway is that creativity is for everybody. It's for every one of us. And I think the whole idea of making wild things happen, I love that part of it. And I think this book, it's a book for people who probably think they're not creative. And because McNair's going to bet on the fact that they are. You know, creative is not a human trait. But, you know, I know he would have had, it's a spiritual trait. It's something, especially, you know, we know because of Ephesians 3:10, where Paul says we are his poem. It's actually we are his workmanship, but it's really the Greek word poema, from which we get our word poem. So each one of us are his creative expression, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which he prepared beforehand for us to walk in. So he's already done it, and that's why I love that word uncover. I think Dr. Sweet used that in his review of the book. We uncover this stuff because God's already been there ahead of us, and we find it by having the courage and the big ideas to move forward.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And it's funny too. You further dial in on that interview there, the time you guys had there. You know, and the whole idea about, and many people can relate to this, when you're in the you're in your having a staff meeting, you know, and you guys are wanting to brainstorm. You're not brainstorming. You're arguing with snacks on the table. And I thought that was very, because I think there's so many times, we think we're brainstorming, but you know, we're blocking these ideas from coming to full fruition.
Right. And the other thing that stood out to me was the amount of time he spent on talking about his parents and what that support meant to him and how it opened up so much for his life. You know, that's incredible, especially for Christian parents, because Christian parents are so often the most uptight in the world, you know, and they're not going to let their kid go because who knows what they might get into, you know, so we're actually holding our kids back from what they were meant to be doing.
McNair's parents did not fear what God had already placed into McNair's head. They just supported it, and they moved him along to where he was able to explode. We'd be so smart if John and I could be that great with Chandler.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a great example.
Well, I got to say, too, one of the things as well in all of that, I mean, I think I heard him say, correct me if I'm wrong, sitting there with a blank piece of paper, having to design 5 different, Disney parks. Did I hear that right? Could you imagine?
Yeah.
I played Roller Coaster Tycoon on my computer, back in the day. And I remember I'd get in the zone too. I'd be like creating these massive roller coaster park, theme parks. And my wife would walk in the computer, the office there at like 4 in the morning. She'd look at me, she'd go, "What on earth?" And I'd be like, "Oh, this is the most amazing theme park. I'm rolling in it. This is amazing." And but I can't imagine just a plain piece of paper and say, "Let's go and let's get creative," what that whole process would be like. But what does that look like in our own lives, even tomorrow when we wake up? What does that plain piece of paper look like, and how are we going to respond to it? I mean, I think that to me is inspiring to me of what, how am I going to respond even when I get up, when we're done with the show,
Yeah. Yep. It's just inspiring. And to remember though that it's Christ in us. It's the Lord opening up the way and uncovering what he's already put there. I think that's amazing. When I do something creative myself or I write a song, that's what it feels like. I feel like I just uncovered something that's already been there. But you have to get yourself there to do it. You have to step out, or else you won't find it. I think that's what we learned from Craig. Well, I think we probably should be wrapping up here pretty soon, don't you, Gunnar?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that there's one thing I want to share with your audience though, John, and I think it'd be really
okay.
on this inaugural show. Of course, we want to talk a little bit about next week's show and just kind of get everybody talking about where you're going this week with the Catch and the next few minutes that you have. I know we had some folks that were trying to call in on the show, and I'm not sure we're going to be able to get to everybody tonight. If not, over in the weeks ahead, we're going to try to open up the phone lines. But, Marty alluded to wanting to connect Peter Hirschend with McNair Wilson in the future about these two guys and creative minds. And of course the Hirschend family Entertainment was the different theme parks across the country that they own. Peter's a pretty special guy. He's been involved in a lot of things. How would you describe Peter, John?
Well, he's, I just love his voice. he's the most reassuring, stable, everything's going to be okay person I know. And he's just, he's big. He just thinks big. And he and his brother made this whole thing happen. And it's just amazing. And yet when you meet him, he's just so approachable and normal and loving. He's a great guy. And he means a lot to the Cats because he's He's the chairman of our board, and he has made a lot happen for us.
Gunner, he's my best friend, but if you met him, he would be your best friend, too.
Well, I tell you what, guys, I've had the opportunity here just recently to talk to Peter on the phone, and I wanted to share a little bit about what he said with your audience as we talk about the catch and the daily catch and where we're going over the next several weeks on this show. And would it be okay that I share a little bit of that phone conversation with the audience?
I'm not sure. Let's find out.
Oh, let's find out. This is going to be just a little bit of a conversation with Peter Hershen, the Peter Hershen. This is a saying talking about the impact, John, that you and Marty and the catch have made on his life and the impact it'll make on our listeners' lives and audience lives. So just a little bit here with Peter Hershen, then we'll come back and wrap the show up.
Okay. Wow.
You know, ministries are amazing. There are literally tens of thousands of ministries out there. Most of them, it is my observation, don't make a difference in individual lives. As I have known John and Marty for years, I have watched the focus that John in particular in his writings, his speakings, the daily catch, is focused on making a difference one person at a time. He is working to change the next step I take. I'm on a walk. I'm on a journey, and that journey is made of lots of steps. John is there not so much to change, to evolutionary change my entire life. He is there to help guide my steps along the pathway, knowing that I'm gonna fall down, knowing that I'm gonna be distracted, knowing that I'm gonna fail. But John, through the catch, through his ministry, Marty standing right beside him, is there to help pick me up. I can go back and read a catch and say, oh yeah, that's right. How did he know that's what I was facing at the moment? That's pretty insightful. In a way, it reminds me of one of my heroes in my life, a person I wish I'd known. I only know of her through the written word, and that's Helen Keller. Helen Keller said lots and lots of things, but she talked so much about tomorrow and what was to come. John talks about tomorrow and what is to come for me. Helen Keller had a quote, and I'll just share it here. The quote is a story she told about herself. She said, somebody, some not very thoughtful person, had the temerity to ask her, Helen Keller, isn't it just awful to be blind? I can't think of a more thoughtless question, but that was asked nonetheless. And her response was classic. She said, no, being blind isn't so bad. It's having sight, but no vision. Hmm. John brings vision.
Hmm. Wow. There you go, John.
Oh, my God. Oh.
That's Peter Hershen.
Whoa.
And the impact
that takes my breath away. I can't think of anything I would want anyone to say, especially him. That's amazing.
That was a wonderful conversation, and just talking about the impact of the daily catch that you've had on people like Peter Hershen, and I know many others, and on this inaugural show that we're talking about. I wanted to encourage you with that, since Marty had brought up Peter's name earlier. I thought I'd slip that in. But
Surprise. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you on behalf of everybody. And You know, John, before we set up, next week's show and land the plane on this one, we've got McNair. McNair's in that chat room, and he was asking, what was the Ephesians verse again that you were sharing?
Yeah, Ephesians 3:10. We are his workmanship or his poem, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which he prepared beforehand for us to walk in, to discover.
We are his
workmanship made by his craftsmanship. I have a song around. Maybe we'll have
it.
To do that next time.
Yeah, we'll see. We need to get that song and play it. And what a
cool.
Great verse. It fits
yeah.
it with a glove. Hey,
okay,
next week. Next week, John.
We got to wrap up.
Jess Richardson's going to be on.
Victim of sex trafficking. Jess was a slave. She was beaten, broken, and abused right here in the United States. This is going to be an incredible experience. And as we really expose something of the sex industry right here among us.
Yes.
In the United States. We're not going anywhere else.
Nope.
We're just talking about here.
Yes. That's going to be an incredible time next week. 6 p.m. Pacific, Jess Richardson here on The Catch. John, this is going to be incredible.
Yeah.
We want to invite everybody to be a part of this show. This show here, we're going to have the links posted. You can go back and share it with your friends, the archive links. I know, John, you're going to be talking right back tomorrow morning on catchjohnfisher.wordpress.com. You're going to be continuing to talk about the creativity that you're talking about with McNair Wilson. But this is just the beginning. John, you got any closing words that you want to share with the audience before we land?
I just want to encourage everybody this week to think wild thoughts. Think big. Think outside the box, and don't cut yourself off so fast. And just remember Craig's little party for $240 on the 40-yard line of the Coliseum, and realize that there's just amazing things you can do if you move ahead in the Lord. That's what you've got to do.
Amen. Amen. Well, John, hey, look, this is show number one. It's going to continue to grow and grow, and we'll get used to this Blog Talk Radio thing. And we want to thank McNair Wilson, teawithmcnair.com.
Yes.
And he's texting us right now. It looks like it's Ephesians 2:10. Looking at that there. So McNair is being active in the
3:10.
Chat window. Yes, 3:10. Next week we're going to find out. And but thanks so much, John, for being here and being a part of the show. And hey, we'll see you tomorrow morning, John, on The Catch.
Yeah, and this is John Fisher at The Catch Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for joining us. And we are looking forward to next Tuesday, November 5th, Election Day at 6 p.m.
You're listening to The Catch with
John
Fisher on Blog Talk Radio.
Back
connecting
next week.
Life to faith.
World is trying to get it together. Trying to help their fellow man. Hoping we can make it better.